I just have a desire to be great. You know, that's one of the main things. The fact that it's another man on the other side of the ring that wants to hurt me.
I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time.
He can bring the pressure. He can box. I'm a true champion. I'm willing to go to his turf. I'm a step one. I'm a crush him. Y'all can mark my words to this. I'm a crush him. He's a C-plus fighter. I'm an A-plus fighter because I'm a dominate. This guy is flat footy, swing wild. I'm not worried about who his trainer is because the trainer can't get in there and fight for him already, mentally, physically, because I'm a team like he's a C-plus fighter. I'm a dominate. I'm a dog this fighter. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal, most vicious, and most ruthless champion that's ever been. There's no one to stop me. Link with the conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairport. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want even children.
Can you? Listen, your concentration is weaving a little bit.
That we're ready, we're at home, we're where we're supposed to be. Flames don't intimidate us. What do? We control the flames.
What's up? What's up, everyone? Welcome to Season 2, Episode 30. It is the Standing 8 Podcast, and this is your host, Mike Gomes, with the usual suspects. They're all on the line right now waiting to talk nothing but boxing. We have a great show ahead of you guys, ahead of tonight, with a special guest with Joseph Correa on. I have Courtney, Tommy, Aaron, D-Rock, my co-hosts all on, and we're going to be breaking down the Errol Spence Jr. versus Mikey Garcia fight that just happened this past Saturday, and we're going to be talking a lot more about certain things that are coming up, including the Deontay Wilder versus the Zone debacle in terms of an offer that was made, and we're definitely going to be talking, you know, about more things regarding boxing. But let me introduce my guys right now. Tommy, Courtney, D-Rock, Joseph Correa. It's been a long time. How is everyone doing?
Blessed, blessed.
D-Rock is here to this day.
Yo.
There you go. So obviously everyone saw the fight on Saturday, right? There was, you know, leading up to the fight on Saturday, there was a lot of mixed emotions and predictions, and a lot of people thought that Mikey Garcia, who obviously came up two weight classes to fight one of the best boxers in that division, a lot of people thought that Mikey actually had a chance. And there was a lot of arguments I saw on Facebook and a lot of social media forums, and including amongst analysts and pundits out there. But we saw what happened. It was a dominating performance by Errol Spence. Did that shock anybody? And I'm going to start with you, Corny. Did it shock you that Errol was so dominant against a very good boxer, although a boxer who had a size disadvantage?
You know, the only thing that shocked me was that Spence didn't put him away. I didn't really predict a round, but I was pretty much thinking that after the sixth round, it was just going to be too much for Mikey. And Mikey held up. It was one of those things where I think there was many moments later in the fight where Spence moved to pretty much go in for the kill and finish him. Mikey would hit him with something that was just hard enough to keep him honest and give him something to think about. So I think overall, I think the fight was I was very impressed by Spence in the acumen that he showed with his boxing, with his movement, with his with his judgment of the range and the pace of the fight. He pretty much controlled the fight in all aspects, just except that result of getting him out early. But I mean, anytime when you can go 12 rounds, when you can go 12 rounds like that and look dominant and not skip a beat and keep it thorough the whole fight, I mean, that's in and of itself. And as far as Mikey Garcia, I think he deserves all the credit due in the fight for hanging in there, even when his corner with his brother Robert Garcia wanted to basically throw the towel in and pull the plug in the fight. He was just like, no, let me go back in there. You know, let me finish this out. And he did, and he showed a lot of heart, showed a lot of balls doing that. So credit is due to him, you know, in that aspect. But for Mikey, it was just one of those things. I think 147 was just beyond the ceiling for him, and it showed with that performance. And I don't think Mikey Garcia looks too much better against the other elite at 147. So I really don't think he had any business in the ring with Spence at 147, and I don't think it's his weight class. So.
Joseph Correa, how are you, bud? It's been a while. Obviously, you saw the fight. I'm sure you're plugged into the TV. If not, you know, there present yourself. Did the outcome of that fight surprise you in any way?
No, not at all. I mean, everybody knew exactly what was going to happen. I've always said, you know, Mikey's a great fighter. I like Mikey a lot. I like his humble attitude. He can really box. He has great boxing skills. But sometimes the fact that he's such a disciplined fighter, it actually works against him. And in this case, it really worked against him because coming in with all the disadvantages or perceived disadvantages, he had to do something different to kind of change the outcome. And as you saw, no matter what he tried to do, Spence had an answer for it. So I don't think anything unexpected happened, other than maybe like what Courtney said, that he didn't leave early that night. But, you know, hats off to him to be able to stick around, you know. But you also have to wonder how much of that was Errol Spence just wanting to showcase wrinkles in his game, you know, and kind of announce himself to the welterweight division, like, look, I am the cream of the crop, so to speak, of this division.
D-Rock, were you surprised and this fight means for Mikey? Do you think that this fight maybe took a couple of years off of Mikey's career? Because he did take somewhat of a beating in that fight. Before you answer that question, I will tell you this. I did watch the Errol Spence. This is just to attest how heavy-handed Mikey Garcia is, despite the fact that he came up two weight divisions. I did watch Errol Spence after the fight giving an interview about 30 minutes later, and believe it or not, Errol Spence's face was all marked up. That's testament that Mikey Garcia does have heavy hands, but not heavy enough maybe for the welterweight division. So, D-Rock, go ahead and answer it. Let me know what you thought of the fight. And I also want to know your take on whether or not Mikey can compete with anybody else in that division.
I mean, as far as the outcome, win or loss, nothing really surprised me. What I was probably very impressed about with Errol Spence is that Spence not only beat him with his size advantage, it probably was not even the biggest determining factor in the outcome. Spence beat him with pure skill. And the fight probably should have been stopped after the ninth round. In hindsight, I kind of think that the fact that Mikey was able to survive the last three, it maybe says something that he could hang with a few of the B-level guys at 47. I don't think for one second that he belongs there, because these other guys will come in a lot heavier for future reference. You made a good point about Spence's face being marked up. At times, Spence seemed a little tentative, maybe going for the kill, probably fearing one power shot maybe coming his way. But on the other end of that, it surprised me that Mikey, knowing he was so far down in the fight, it didn't seem like he was willing to take any risk, or maybe Spence wasn't allowing him to take the risk with the way he was boxing him. What I did not see was Mikey, and he alluded to that post-fight, that he wasn't able to get into a rhythm. But at this level in the game, you have to be able to make adjustments if – you're going to compete at the highest level. What it does speak, and there's two parts to what I'm going to say. I do see a lot of quote-unquote fanboys, Spence fanboys, relishing in seeing Mikey look subpar, or so to speak. What I want to speak to that is that we have to look at exactly what Mikey's competition has been. You know, when he made it to 140, he would all agree would be a C plus junior welterweight in Lipinets. Adrian Broner is Broner. We knew, we kind of predicted the outcome of that. So for him to jump, arguably, two weight classes against a top three welterweight, I think more or less speaks with his willingness to fight a top guy and not necessarily his ability to win and compete at that weight division. You know, if the Garcias do aim to get a title in the fifth division, I could see it, you know, if one of these guys vacates a title, or if, you know, for whatever circumstances, Mikey's able to get an easy belt at 47, like Broner did with Paulie Malignaggi, something along those lines. But Mikey doesn't belong there. It was the easiest possible belt to obtain at that moment. And that's right. Kind of what I'm alluding to. But in the end, Mikey does not belong at 147 pounds. But as I mentioned, I do credit him for hanging on those last two rounds. He got beat up. He got beat up. And you know, we saw two of the three judges score 120 to 108, and even one judge scoring at 120 to 107, giving a 10-8 round without a knockdown. And that'll just tell you the story of how one-sided this fight was. You had a pro-Mexican crowd, and you know, if I'm going on, you know, please stop me. But you had a pro-Mexican crowd where, you know, sometimes you see judges swayed by the crowd or just by, you know, boxing politics. But Errol was too good, too sharp that night, and you know, didn't allow one round to be, you know, to be misjudged, because at that point, you know, Errol didn't lose any part of that fight to me. You know, just the punch output. You got a welterweight throwing over 1,000 punches and landing a high percentage against a smaller guy who you would assume would be the quicker puncher. The adjustments that Mikey would need to make moving up in weight would be his critique at the lower weight classes. He fights too straight down the line, possibly looking to land one big shot. So, you know, just to answer the initial question, the outcome of the fight did not surprise me at all. The way the margin of victory was probably the biggest surprise to me, if anything.
Gotcha. And I think a lot of people were shocked in terms of – I think if you had half a brain and you watched boxing enough, you knew that obviously Mikey had no chance of winning. But most of us thought that maybe Mikey can win 2-3 rounds and make it maybe somewhat interesting. We didn't think that Errol was going to look this dominant against Mikey Garcia, who's, you know, a 32-year-old veteran, despite the fact he's coming up two weight divisions. I mean, we've seen other fighters come up two weight divisions like Kell Brook and, you know, fight Triple G and look good in a few rounds. Obviously, that was not the case against, you know, the case with Mikey. And I think that Joseph Correa said it best. It's almost like Mikey's way too disciplined, and that causes him to be so predictable, and that's a demise for him. You know, by watching the fight, I could tell you that he doesn't even – he can't be Thurman. He can't be Sean Porter. I don't think he can even compete against Danny Garcia, to be honest with you. He, you know, obviously he's not going to – he's not going to compete with the top five guys in that division. No way, no how.
No, wait, no, we got people that are saying that, he can beat everybody else in that division.
No, those are idiots, Tommy.
Did anyone notice the tactic that Errol Spence used to keep him off balance all night? He used the Floyd Mayweather tactic of pawing out a jab.
Yep, the pawing jab.
And then throwing jabs to the body, little subtle jabs, and right hands to the body, not hard, just enough to keep him off balance constantly. He did it over and over and over and over and over, and Mikey couldn't do anything about it. And that's a tactic that Floyd's used for years to keep opponents off balance. You know, it's not meant to hurt anyone, anything like that, but it makes you reset. And the fact that Mikey's such a disciplined fighter, he would reset instead of adjusting to it, not resetting and trying to do something off of that. He couldn't. You know, I don't know if it's because he feared what was coming after it or he was just truly off balance. But he did that all night. I don't know if anyone noticed that subtle little thing, but it was all night. If you go back and watch the fight, every single round, he would stick him with jabs to the body or subtle little right hands. You know, again, nothing hard, just kind of playing, you know, the joust game with him.
Yeah. Tommy actually was at the fight live with I think, Aaron and Courtney. And I think Tommy, from my understanding, based on a group chat, also noticed exactly the same thing. Tommy, you were there live. Why don't you tell us, you know, touch base on what Joseph Correa just said, and why don't you tell us what you saw there at the fight, being that you were live?
Yeah, man, that was the same exact thing that Courtney and I was discussing at the fight. He kept sticking him with that stiff straight jab right to the lower midsection, just to keep him off balance. And I think that's really what lent him the ability to just continue to be tenacious on him the way he was. And I also think that he executed his game plan pretty flawlessly. I think we can all say that. He looked very sharp in there, but I think that he was also fueled a little bit by the day before. You know, he put out that statement saying that he wasn't fazed or he wasn't bothered by, you know, the overwhelming boos of the crowd at the weigh-in and lack of support on his end at that moment. He had a lot of supporters out there, but just overall, it was very pro Mikey at that moment. I think it did level out a little bit fight night. The crowd was pretty amazing. I think that, you know, we discussed it looked pretty similar to when Canelo was there against Liam Smith. But I think he came out and he was hyped to put on a show. He went in there and he completely turned it up. He caught that flow and he seen that he was able to completely dominate Mikey in the way he did, which was just, to me as well, the most surprising. I expected Mikey to at least get off a little bit more than what he did. I mean, he just got completely shut down. It was almost disrespectful the way he just kept coming at him. I think it was round 11. I think at one point it was about a minute left in round 11, and he had landed 31 of 52 punches, and Mikey had only landed 1 of 4. It was ridiculous, the onslaught that he was putting on him, man. And I expected him to at least knock him down the way that he was performing. But you know, I mean, it was still solid top to bottom, and he swept it, man. So he looked great out there. I don't know what these guys talking about with Mikey can beat everybody else in the welterweight division, because that's just completely casual and ridiculous. He needs to step on down. I do also think that, you know, Pacquiao was there to actually size up Mikey, hoping that he looked better than he did. I think when he was in the ring post-fight, he didn't want no parts of Errol when Errol invited him in there and he was trying to take pictures and shit. No, he didn't want no part of him. He was hoping that Mikey looked better, but he didn't. So he had to just kind of show face and I think he's getting, he might be getting ready to get sucked into something he ain't ready for.
D-Rock, you wanted to make a comment and then pose a question.
Yeah, I mean, just a few things. One, Bobby Garcia needs to tell Mikey to stop raising his hand after every round of getting your ass beat, because you're not swinging the judges with that. Also, before we even talk about 47 or even 40, which Mikey would have a lot of problems with guys at 140.
Like who?
For example, who?
Like who?
Who at 140?
I mean, I think Regis Prograis gives him the business.
No.
Regis Prograis has the skill, the slickness.
Yep. Regis Prograis is way too defensively liable.
He hits just as hard, if not harder.
He hits hard. Yeah, he's a very
than Mikey Garcia. And he's very disciplined and doesn't waste
any. And as precise of a puncher as Mikey is, though, as with Prograis going out the way he does, pretty much eschewing defense and putting that to the winds, like basically that would just be one stanza where I see that fight going where Prograis would just seriously go after Mikey and get slept with one shot, I think.
Here's the problem.
And I do think Prograis has a good chin. I think he has a good chin, but the thing is, with guys like that who like to trade against a fighter who is disciplined and who sticks to the script like Mikey, I think that is extremely dangerous. I think that is extremely dangerous. But, I mean, Prograis would probably give him the best fight, but, like, other than that at 140, who else is there? Really?
To add on to Prograis, the one factor you're leaving out is that we saw how bad he looked against a southpaw, and Regis is a hard-hitting southpaw who's not afraid to trade and can land that shot.
Yeah. I think you're right.
You got a very, very skilled fighter, Jose Ramirez, too. Well, I'm not saying would beat Mikey Garcia, but Mikey Garcia is not going to run through these guys. And he's not going to look that good. But even back at the division, he does have a belt in. Listen, he's not beating Lomachenko. Let's get that out of the way.
No, I got to agree with you on that.
You thought he would. And you thought he would, well, right? Am I correct by saying
that?
Well,
I thought the size difference, if they were to make that fight at a higher weight class, if Mikey were to able to make some demands, but the way he looked, if Lomachenko
too disciplined, like Correa said.
Yeah, if Lomachenko goes in there and throws punches and bunches the way that Errol Spence did, you know what? Loma can sleep him as well. But there are other fights that Mikey, you know, needs to make. If I say it almost sounds like I'm hating, but there are guys who will give him a lot of problems at 135, and I think his stock went down a lot because he doesn't want to go back down to that weight class.
Who else at 135 besides Lomachenko, though?
I mean, Tank Davis can make 135. Teofimo Lopez can make 135. Fortuna can make 135. Richard Comey is a great champion, undefeated, with a lot of power.
Did you just say Fortuna, though, man?
Javier Fortuna.
Did you just say Fortuna who faked the injury against Granados, man?
Javier Fortuna is a highly skilled boxer, right?
Honestly, I think you got to throw out all of that power stuff, though, because, I mean, he just fought the boogeyman, and he didn't get him out of there. So, I mean, these smaller guys, I don't think power is really going to be an issue.
Mikey has a great chin, yeah.
I don't think he has power like Errol Spence. You know, and obviously
he doesn't have the boxing skill.
Prograis has been befuddled by guys who could box. Like that obscure Argentinian guy he fought before the fight before last. Like that was, you know, that was kind of a hard fight because that dude came in and he was boxing against Prograis. Prograis baits dudes into firefights, and he's good at firefights because he's good at catch and shoot, and he's good at fighting on the inside. But guys that are sticking a steady jab, moving, giving him a lot to think about, not so much. Mikey is capable of doing all that.
And Mikey's got IQ on top of it all.
Hell of an IQ.
Yeah.
And
he
remember,
couldn't, he couldn't make
what
the adjustments.
Getting hit with. What he was getting hit with Spence, because what people have to realize is it's the accurate shots that can get you out of there. The ones you don't see and they're real accurate, like Spence was landing everything accurately. Those type can really hurt you, and he survived. You know, it wasn't like he was getting hit with, you know, some wild stuff. He was getting hit with pinpoint shots. So a guy who might not be as sharp, I really don't see them getting Mikey out of there like that.
And even,
you know, so
and even those jabs were hard.
Correct. Everything was, and they were pinpoint accurate. So, you know, say what you want about these guys and their power, but I don't think Mikey would be bothered, you know, by that. I mean, anybody can get knocked out, but I think he could handle the power at 35 and 40 for sure. But Lomachenko,
yeah,
definitely
gonna,
out of the question. He's too disciplined, and he'll get really, really confused by Lomachenko.
And I think that's why that fight happened. I think that the reason why, let's face it, the Spence versus Garcia fight for Mikey was a win-win for him anyway, and it was a payday. I mean, not a lucrative payday,
exactly,
but a payday nonetheless. It was a payday nonetheless. It's a win-win for him because anybody with boxing acumen would know that there's no way Mikey – you know, listen, I was expecting Mikey not to make it past the ninth round. You know, and I was very surprised that Mikey made it past the ninth round. I was very surprised that when his brother, when Robert Garcia asked him, "You give me something or else I'm gonna throw in the towel," I was very surprised. You saw Mikey did came out, and Mikey did was very responsive, and Mikey was given Arrow something for the first 30 seconds. The problem is you're in against a monster who might be right now the best in that division, right? I'm giving Arrow the slight advantage over Bud Crawford, the slight advantage over Keith Thurman right now in that division. You know, a guy who's a heavy, heavy hander. I think Mikey's the only guy he has not knocked out. He has a huge reach advantage over Mikey and used it very well. And also showed the whole entire world that he can box and he's got IQ. He's got beautiful ring IQ. That's exactly what he showed. And, you know, Correa was right. You know, the fact that he kept putting Mikey, you know, out of range and keep putting Mikey off balance. I mean, that's just a testament to how smart Spence is in a ring, you know. And for a while, because Spence hasn't really stepped in the ring other than Kell Brook, I mean, if you really look at his resume, who has he really, really fought? And even though a lot of people are, you know, saying, oh, my God, Spence now is the best in the division because he fought and he won against a lighter, opponent, which is Mike Garcia. I mean, we can't really gauge his how well he's going to, you know, do against other guys. But, I mean, he passes all the eye tests, like as far as skill. I mean, the guy's got the whole package. And I'm not a Spence fan. I really am not. But, I mean, he did fight against a very good boxer who I didn't expect to do much against him. But I expected him to handle his own, you know, in certain instances. And Mikey couldn't do that because Spence didn't allow him to do it. You know, it wasn't because Mikey's not better than Spence or it's not because he doesn't have the skill set. Just Arrow was smart. He wouldn't allow him to do it. That's a vicious skill that he possesses in the ring, and that's why now I'm giving him the edge against a lot of people in the welterweight division. You know, but let's move on from, don't ever
disrespect the man who gave Chris Algieri his only knockout loss. All right, all right.
And shout out to Chris Algieri.
Let's keep him moving.
But he's a better nutritionist. He's a better nutritionist than a boxer at this current moment. But yeah, let's move on to another topic. You know, what's next for Spence? And I'm gonna ask this question to Joseph Correa. You have a lot of insight when it comes to the boxing world. What do you think is next? Who do you think is next for Errol?
I honestly think it's going to be Sean Porter, because Pacquiao, you know, I just can't see Pacquiao at his age and size just at this point in his career, dealing with a guy like Spence, who's long and lean, much bigger than he is, I just can't see him doing anything there. And it really doesn't benefit Pacquiao at all. So I don't see that. I would see Keith Thurman Pacquiao before in Pacquiao happening. I honestly think it's going to be Sean Porter, because Porter's people want the fight. Spence says they'll take the fight. Just something on Porter, kind of off topic, but I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I have the feeling, and I was talking to Hector about this. At first, I thought that maybe he was getting better defensively and a little more disciplined, but I honestly think his style is kind of wearing him down, because in his last few fights, he hasn't been as active. He hasn't been as aggressive. And that was really, really evident in the Ugas fight. He was more hesitant, you know, stuff we haven't seen from Sean Porter. And I think that kind of works against him, because his style is kind of what made him, even though it was ugly and whatnot. He made fights, you know, ugly and kind of in his favor, because
that's crazy, though, right?
Clearly, what's crazy?
That his style, once he does finally calm down, it works against him. Like, his style was so crazy.
Yeah, it works against him because he, out of all the top guys, in my opinion, he has the least boxing skills. And I think most would agree with that. He has to make it rough and tumble to kind of balance that out. So I think the fact that he's kind of slowing that down, or he's slowing down, I don't know which to call it, but I think that works against him. And I think that's a good fight for Errol Spence, because number one, he'll pick up that belt and, you know, make himself even more of a threat in the division to do more things. He'll have a lot more options, because then dudes will have to fight him even more, even if they don't want to. But I think that's where they're going to look, honestly. I really do. Obviously, it's not going to be Crawford anytime soon. And speaking on Crawford, I think even as masterful as Spence was in the fight against Mikey, he has to even show more against a guy like Crawford, because of the versatility that Crawford brings, being a switch
yep.
hitter.
Amen.
Crawford's so dynamic. I think that Crawford's even more dynamic than Spence is. And I was told personally, my friend who's a prominent referee, we all know, the top guy in the world is in terms of referees. He told me straight up that Crawford has a special quality about him that, you know, I mean, this guy deals with all fighters, and he named two guys. He said Triple G and Spence. I mean, Crawford have a special, just this special confidence that many other fighters don't have, and you can feel it. So, you know, confidence goes a long way in sports, particularly boxing. It's a one-on-one sport. So as good as Spence looked, he's got to look even better against a guy like Crawford. So there's a ways to go. So I think Porter later in the year, and, you know, depending on what moves Pacquiao makes, which I think Thurman might be on the register for that. We'll see, man. What do you think?
I'm going to redirect it to Courtney. Courtney, you want to touch on what Joseph Correa just mentioned, and what do you think is going to be next for Errol?
Yeah, particularly on that last part of the last statement he made. I think he was right on with saying that, as far as Spence having to be more special, more dynamic in order to compete or beat a Crawford. I think that was so profound with him saying that. And the thing is, as being at the fight and seeing it up close and seeing how masterful he was against Mikey Garcia, I'm afraid the only way you get more masterful or you expound on a performance like that or to show another level beyond that is experience. And I think that's what's going to be the factor in that. And a lot of people say, well, Spence, he's been a champion longer. He's been at the 147 his whole division. Crawford's the guy who's coming up. But I think size, weight division, it negates that because the guys are really similar in size to begin with. But I think with Crawford, Spence head to head, if it happens right now, I think that's going to be the factor in that Crawford is more dynamic. He's more versatile because he's had that experience to go off of because he's dealt and he's meshed with all those different styles that he's been in the ring with. So that's why ultimately right now I would have to give Crawford the advantage in a head-to-head matchup against Spence. As far as what's next for Spence, well, I think it's damn sure not going to be Pacquiao. I think we saw that. I think we heard that in Pacquiao's voice. We saw it in all over his face. And we saw it in his demeanor that he was very, very much disinterested in fighting Spence. And, you know, I've said for a long time, none of these guys are afraid of each other. This is what they do. This is what they've been doing since they were small. So when it's like that, you're not afraid of any man or anybody who is physically against you. But I think if you enter in where this is your life, this is what you do, this is your living, you know, making a living with two hands, and where the trajectory of your life and your family's life can change because of the result or the outcome of a fight, I think fighters do come to fear the outcomes. And I think with Pacquiao, I think that's an outcome and a possibility of an outcome that he really doesn't have time for at this point in his career. I think with Pacquiao, he's looking to make as much money for as low a risk as possible. And really, ultimately, that's why people rock with Heyman, because he's not when you have that star level, that star quality, it's not going to be anything unreasonable or over your head or more than you can handle. With other promoters, more like an Eddie Hearn, Top Rank with Bob Arum, they're going to throw you in there and tell you, you got to make your mantle. So I think with Pacquiao, he's come to recognize his position in the sport in that he can, you know what I'm saying, he can take the comers and fight the fights that he wants to fight. So with that, I didn't see and I haven't heard anything from Pacquiao beyond surface that he would really pursue that fight. As far as Porter goes, I think that's a possibility. I think Porter would get a fight with Pacquiao before Errol Spence does, and I think with one time is really gunning for Pacquiao. I think he's gunning for Pacquiao the most aggressively out of all the other title holders. But I also think with one time coming off as being as long as he was out of the ring, the level of injury he had, and his performance in his last fight, I think one time is really going to be looking for another tune-up before even fighting a Pacquiao or before entertaining the idea of unifying with Spence. So in terms of what's next for Spence, I'm going to throw a name out there that's going to sound kind of wild. But there is a young and strapping kid coming out of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area named Jamal Shango James, and he took an early loss to Ugas in a close fight, but he's been making some noise, and he brings a very passionate court audience, and he's been getting a lot of airtime on the Fox platform with PBC, and if I'm not mistaken, he might be next up for Spence as far as the IBM ratings or rankings. So I really wouldn't be surprised to see a Jamal James get that fight with Spence while the rest of it plays out kind of on the boards with the other guys at 147.
I'm going to put Manny Pacquiao on the line real quick. Yes, this is Manny. I come from the Philippines. I don't want to fight Errol. I want to stay away from that bad man. All right, so there you have Manny Pacquiao. Thanks, Manny.
Yo, you know we just lost the whole Filipino audience right there, dude.
Hey, you were accurate about Bob Arum, though, man. Speaking of him just putting people in there, man, Shakur Stevenson and Pitufo Diaz. That is a super dangerous fight for Shakur Stevenson. In fact, in my opinion, like, it's way too early for him. Way too early. I don't know what the matchmakers were thinking. I don't know if they've just kind of said, you know what, we're really going to see what we have with Stevenson, so we're going to do this.
They saw his last fight against Misiaki Ito, and I think with the matchmakers, where they're coming from in that stance or that view is that this guy wasn't exactly what and potentially might not be for the long term, so let's go ahead and sacrifice him for the sake of building a star in Shakur Stevens. Could that backfire? Certainly it can. But I think that's what they were thinking when they made this fight.
I think it's going to backfire, bro. I just don't see – Stevenson doesn't – and I've said this from the beginning. I know Lopez personally, Teofimo, spent time with him. He is the cream of the crop of the Olympians that came out and said that from the beginning, from that year. Shakur Stevenson, Michael Conlon, all these dudes, they don't impress me at all. There's nothing about them. And Shakur's gotten – it looks like he's matured a little bit, you know. He's sitting on his punches a little better and whatnot. I just don't think he can keep a guy like Diaz off of him. Because even in the Ito fight, I was at that fight with Hector. We were covering, and I was shooting. He was riding. Even in that fight – as you know, because you really follow those Japanese dudes and whatnot, Courtney, but those dudes are durable, and they're going to fight to the end, so they're going to be tough for anybody. I just don't see that same level of toughness and grit coming from a guy like Stevenson, so I really think he's in trouble in this fight. I really do. I think he could outbox Diaz potentially, but Diaz can punch. He can fight. He's a tough guy. You see, even though he went through adversity in that fight, he made it all the way through, and it was a fight. I mean, it was a knockout, drag 'em out fight. One of the better ones I've been to. I don't know that Stevenson has that level right now. I think it's too early for a guy like Pitufo Diaz. I really do.
I want to offer a quick redirect on Teofimo Lopez's comments, though. And, like, I think anybody who knows me know that if there's anybody who is impressed by this guy, it's me. I've repeatedly said I think he is Camacho 2.0. But as far as that statement is concerned about him not being impressed, I think that's a little shade too far as being directed at Stevenson, because Teofimo Lopez went out in the first round of the Olympics. And Stevenson has a silver medal, so I think if we're trying to base, you know what I'm saying, Stevenson's or gauge Stevenson's talent level off that comment from somebody who is knowledgeable or whatever, I think that's a little bit of hyperbole right there on Teofimo Lopez's part. But I mean, I can pretty much co-sign on the other stuff that you're saying, but as far as Stevenson, that skill set. It's definitely there, and he's shown a level of composure of acumen that's a little bit higher than where most prospects, even Olympic medalists who transition to the pros. I think he's along in that trajectory where most people of his ilk would be at this point, and I think that factors in. I mean, as far as a prediction or whatever in that fight head to head, I think it's tough. I don't think it's uphill climb, but I do think it's tough. But I don't know with top ranks with their matchmaking, because they do have brilliant matchmaking. I think they honestly just see something in Pitufo that they just did not see initially, And like it's when you kind of throw a guy in off his first loss right there to one of your prospects, that kind of raises red flags on where they see the guy. So I mean, that always makes for great fights when one guy sees himself as kind of being sacrificed or fed to somebody else, and they kind of see something in themselves that they go in there and they change the whole trajectory of the situation of the fight. So that's inherently dangerous for Shakur Stevens. But that dynamic and that storyline right there, that's going to make for an intriguing matchup, and I'm very eager to see it.
So do you think as a pro, because I'm talking as a pro, do you think that he's on the same level of a Teofimo Lopez? Now, you said he's further along.
No, that's very hard for any of these guys to be on the same level of a Teofimo Lopez, because the thing about Teofimo Lopez, he's kind of like Cotto was. When Cotto was coming out of the being on the Olympic squad or whatever, a lot of people don't know. Cotto lost in the first round to a guy who was never heard of again. Because think about Teofimo Lopez, think about guys like Cotto, is they have a pro style. They have a built-in
Correct.
Pro style as amateurs.
Correct.
We all know with the scoring system within the amateurs, that is not always conducive of guys who have that. So
Correct.
I mean that's why, you know what I'm saying? So that's why I'll backtrack and say that no, he's not on that level as a pro that Teofimo is, because Teofimo has been groomed for professional boxing since early in his amateur days. I think a guy like Shakur Stevenson was groomed to win medals early in his amateur career. So I think that's the difference between the two and the contrast.
Can we get both guys on the show? Shakur Stevenson and Teofimo, can we make that happen.
We can get Teofimo for sure. He's already agreed that all you gotta do is let me know when you want him.
Great.
You let me
awesome.
Know.
I know we can
I'll
get
call him.
We can get Shakur too.
I'll make that happen.
Yeah. So
we should be able to get Shakur too.
I know Aaron. Yeah. We definitely can get, especially with two Newark boys on the show. Aaron, I know Aaron's listening, so Aaron, let's make that happen. I would reach out to Joseph Curry and make that happen for the next show. You know, so let's move on. So there's been a lot of talks now about Deontay Wilder basically refusing a three-fight deal worth like $100 million with
I think we need to refrain from using that terminology. You know, this is the business of boxing. If we're gonna critique a Wilder from turning down $100 million deal, let's critique Fury for you know doing his business move, getting his money, if we're gonna mention these guys, we gotta be using the same ruler. We know Eddie Hearn's been using his tactics to stay away from the Wilder fight. Why
yep.
is Deontay Wilder not allowed to do what's best for his career and to take
yep.
it the way he wants to and not be managed or be manipulated by other promotional entities and be the top dog at Showtime? Let's not go there. He's not. No, none of these fighters, as Courtney said, are ducking each other. Deontay Wilder deserves just as much leverage and just as much say in his career as these other guys. And if they're offering him a two-fight back-end deal with DAZN for $100 million without telling him exactly what Anthony Joshua is getting paid, he doesn't know if he's getting screwed over or not at the end of that deal. So let's call a spade a spade. Deontay Wilder didn't do anything wrong in my career. Now, the only critique I do have is his desire to fight Vladimir Klitschko as a possible retirement, coming out of retirement fight. And the only answer I would have for that is that he could get that in the UK and get 80,000 people at the O2 Arena. But we're not critiquing Deontay Wilder for doing his thing. We don't critique fighters for fighting their mandatories. We actually have commended him on the show for fighting his mandatories and giving Ortiz his shot. Even when he didn't deserve it. So if Dominic Brazil is his mandatory for that title, Bomb Squad to this day.
Bomb Squad.
Yep.
Hey, but why does Wilder insist on talking about killing dudes, having
with his grandma
brain? I think that I think that's bad for the sport in a way, man, to talk like that. Because then, like, you're going a little further. You know, it's okay to say I'm going to knock this guy out, whatnot, but talking about, like, actually murdering dudes in the ring, and this is not the
first
time.
On a radio show.
Yeah. He did it with Severn, too.
Twice.
You know what I mean?
Twice.
Like, I think that's going too far. And see, when I look at Wilder, I expect that from a guy like Tyson, who was clearly a bulldog and clearly a guy that was someone who used fear as a tactic. Wilder doesn't strike me as that dude. And if you've met Wilder, like, he's super nice in person. I don't know why he insists on doing that. I think that kind of that's a bad thing for him. I'm not saying be
but
a
Wilder,
good guy.
Wilder's put guys to sleep just like Tyson was, though. You know what I'm saying? I agree with you. I don't think any of these guys should be talking about death because you can't come back from that or talking about it lightly or as a means to sell a fight or whatever. I agree with you that all day, every day. But if we're saying
Tyson
was that dog, and then Wilder can't because Wilder's a nice guy. But look what they do in the what they're doing in the ring, and I'm not making that comparison directly between Wilder and Tyson, but
can't.
I mean, if it could be acceptable from Tyson, then I don't see why not. I mean, from Wilder, or if not, if anything, at least come, you know, mildly condoned, or, you know what I'm saying, he can get the pass for that.
Well,
because, I mean,
no, I don't think any of them
doing the same thing. Okay,
wait, Courtney,
okay.
I'm going to answer that for you.
What's up?
No,
I'm going to answer that for you.
Something from a guy like that, but a guy like Wilder, like, nobody should talk like that. I mean, just being in the ring before and whatnot, you just shouldn't talk like that. That's taking it past the sport. At the end of the day, these dudes are feeding their families. So
Tyson,
like,
said he was going to orphan Lennox Lewis's kids.
I agree. No, I agree. I agree. He was messed up too, but it's just nuts, man. I don't know.
But
I don't know.
Here is the difference, and I get your point, Joseph. Here is the difference. Tyson was rolling around in his mansion with a tiger, and Deontay ain't doing that.
Getting tattoos on his
Tyson,
face.
All right. So what Deontay did to that white kid that was talking shit about that the white kid that was talking shit about his daughter. Where he
Charlie
brought him
Dean,
in, they
Charlie
put him gloves. They put gloves. Exactly, Charlie. Like, Tyson would have probably killed a kid on the street. I mean, that's the difference in personalities, right? That was the difference.
Yeah, that,
so
that's
I can,
what I was
I can
getting
understand
at.
That.
You're talking about a real street dude. Like, Tyson was from the streets for real versus a guy who's, you know, from backwoods Alabama. Not to say
they kill people out there. That's the thing, though. Like, okay, Tyson's from Brownsville, Brooklyn. They kill people out there. Where that's the thing a lot of people don't realize, though, is in a lot of those country-ass towns in the backwoods of America, in Mississippi and Alabama and in Georgia, people get smoked out there, too. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I see what you guys are saying, but to lend credibility to one or an understanding to one in one aspect and not for the other, like, that's just looking at it with a very limited scope, though. You know, I think it's evolved on the show is that we're talking about what instances is okay to talk about killing people and not or whatever. But I mean, I'm just saying they're not too dissimilar of people if you look at Tyson and you look at Wilder.
You ever wrestled with
ring,
a boar?
I think there's distinctive personalities and there's a bunch of stuff that. You know, but we're going off topic. Let's go back to the conversation. So I'm going to ask you this, Joseph Correa. Do you think that Showtime can afford to give Deontay a better deal or a deal that's similar to what DAZN was offering and still grant the biggest fight in the heavyweight division in the last, 10 years now and still be able to deliver that, you know, Anthony Joshua versus Deontay fight?
I mean, sure, it can be done, but will it be done is the question. But at the end of the day, I agree with what these gentlemen said. Like, Deontay's got to do the best. This is a sport where your career is limited, just like football or any other high-impact sport. You're not in it forever. You have to maximize your time. So, you know, yeah, the fights can be made. But at the end of the day, you don't just take deals that don't work for you. You know, so if he felt like it wasn't fitting or his advisors felt like it wasn't fitting, I don't blame him for doing what he did. And at the end of the day, he's the asset. So if pushed the right way, they can make the fights happen.
Interesting. My personal feeling, and I don't know about you guys, I don't think we're ever going to get that fight. You know, for some reason, I feel like one of them are going to suffer a loss, and then they're just going to be hesitant to be in. At that point, there's no financial motive, really, to have both of them in the ring. You know, so it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, because it's going to be a struggle between networks to get these two in the ring. I don't know.
I mean,
it's disappointing,
Mike,
because
before,
we should have had
before
it.
You move on to the... Before you move on to the next topic, I think we need to finally realize, I think we can all universally agree that it's not Wilder's side creating all of the roadblocks for potential Anthony Joshua a matchup. We've had Eddie Hearn, you know, offering flat feet to a world champion. Not giving full details on what the other fighter would make, trying to bribe, as we see now, trying to bring guys over to his network or to his platform, and have say over everything that goes on. And you know, even after Wilder decided to stick with Showtime, or not stick with Showtime, but to sign with Showtime, Stephen Espinosa is on record saying he has no problem working joint deals with any of the other outlets.
Here's my problem.
My problem
with Deontay is that there's not a lot of what's his age? Where's he at? He's 32 right now?
32, 33.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of left. There's not a lot of years left. That's number one. Number two.
Actually, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot, but there's a few. Like, this is the thing, though. Heavyweights do
37
later than most other fighters. So, I mean, he's not getting any younger, but he's not. It's not exactly the twilight do or die for Deontay Wilder, too. As, you know, if he was at another lower weight division.
Correct.
You're right about that. My thing is, my next topic or my next point is the fight against Tyson Fury. You know, great fight all in all, but I feel like at that fight he lost leverage. I mean, what was the pay-per-view buys on that again? No, I just literally forgot. Like, what was it?
It's about 350.
Disappointing numbers for a fight of, in my opinion, of that magnitude. So he loses a little bit of leverage.
I don't know if it's disappointing because you're not factoring in, movie theaters, illegal streams, and other platforms that are giving the fight. I don't think he lost any leverage at all. He's managed to put two of the top, arguably two of the top four heavyweights on the canvas, a total of five times. And you know, credit to Tyson Fury for beating that 15 count. You know,
stop that nonsense. Luis Ortiz is damn near 55.
Before we go on to the next topic, I just got one quick redirect, though. I think you guys might remember in a previous show when we were musing about what exactly was the hang-up as far as Wilder and Joshua being made. I raised the possibility that the DAZN, you know, platform, which was kind of not, you know, it was in its infancy, it hadn't been rolled out. We didn't really know what it was going to be yet, but I raised the possibility that Eddie Hearn was stalling to basically unveil or roll out the DAZN package for the consumers. And basically that, you know, right about the time negotiations were heavy, and that's what, you know, and that's where it went. He rolled out the zone. Negotiations went nowhere, and now Hearn is coming back in, saying, you know, with all the, you know, with basically, hey, you know, Wilder, come over, you know, saying, come over here, we'll work out a deal, we can make the fight on the zone, yada yada yada. I think the golden opportunity for Wilder and Joshua was missed when they were both fighting on Showtime. I think it's the thing we have to kind of look at collectively and just kind of smack our own heads, you know, in wonder about is these guys were consistently fighting on the same platform, and it never happened.
Yeah,
like
I think,
you know, and I think it was just you know, as far as assigning blame, I think there's blame on all sides, but it was just a perfectly missed opportunity where the fans got fucked over with this one. And then, you know, when you flash forward to a rematch for all extensive purposes that should be happening next between Wilder and Fury, and then another platform comes on where he signs a deal with ESPN. And obviously he's going to be heavily tied to a lot of their digital streaming and programming there too and stuff like that. So I think, you know, societally and what we're seeing – boxing go is that streaming and the possibility of streaming platforms, even they're affecting fight negotiations because they're taking fight because they're basically ruining the possibility of fights that could happen and would happen on pay-per-view where the, you know, the companies that are backing these streams are coming with a big pot of gold and they're taking the other fighter, you know, in another direction, where, which is a perfect example of what we just saw with Fury. So I mean, that's what we're seeing. And eventually, I think Deontay Wilder is going to have to get on one of these streaming platforms. I think people are looking for Showtime to sign him to a big lucrative deal. I'm just wondering, like, where CBS is going to get the money to do that and to offer that to Wilder. And if so, who is he going to fight that's really worthy of, you know, that big money they would be paying him? Because everybody else, They're
signed somewhere else. Yeah, then I'm trying to address. I don't see it. I think that I think directing him to Showtime might be a bad mistake for him in his career at his age at 32. I think that moving forward, every decision for him should be nothing but motivated by money. That's just me at that, you know, at that age. But anyway, moving forward. Tommy, did you watch the Dmitry Bivol versus Joe Smith fight?
I caught most of it, and then I also caught the highlights of it, yeah.
You know, what did you think as far as Bivol's performance? And do you think that his, you know, the potential next opponent for him is going to be Sergey Kovalev?
I think it should be. I think that he put on a pretty sharp performance. I mean, you know, initially there were a couple of rounds in there where it was a pretty bang out fight there in a few moments, but he just, you know, he tended to last with you know, what he was doing, his combos and just how he just kept on approaching. You know, there were a few of those rounds in there where he was putting on and landing some blows, some serious blows. But I think he looked pretty dominant. Do I think he will beat Sergey Kovalev at this point right now? It kind of remains to be seen for me, because Kovalev seems like he's been rejuvenated, you know, since he's made his changes and everything since his losses. I think that
stop drinking.
Hey, I think that'll be. I think he might be able to do something. You never know. I mean, but overall, Bivol is very, very sharp, man. He's very sharp. He was impressive to me, and I think he'll do great.
Yeah, D Rock, do you want to see him in there with Sergey, or would you rather see him in with Better Beef?
No, I mean, the guy, he's skilled enough. I was actually lucky enough to see him train in my gym, like, right before his last fight. I saw him live and was kind of impressed as far as the way he moves. you know, I'm not a huge fan of those European Frankenstein punches he throws. But the light heavyweight division is stacked of with really good fighters, actually, if you look up and down the division, at least skilled fighters. But at this point, it's a five-man race between Bivol, Kovalev, Beterbiev, Vodzik, who's only up there because he got a limited title win, and somebody, you know, who won a title recently, and a lot of people are overlooking is Staten Island's own Marcus Brown, who I wouldn't mind seeing Bivol fight next because he can match him as far as, you know, power goes. In a potential matchup between Bivol and Kovalev, I still think Kovalev is the superior boxer. But one thing that will never leave Kovalev's mind is getting hit with a hard shot. And for all argument's sake, Bivol throws hard shots.
So I'm glad you Joseph mentioned Correa. Marcus Brown, because I got a wild card for you. Somebody who beat him and was robbed, which is Roddy Bulge Kalajic. He beat him in his own backyard and was robbed. And he's about to take on Beterbiev. So a lot of people are saying Beterbiev, whatnot. He's kind of basic, man. He's powerful, but he's kind of basic. And if you go and watch Hot Rod fight, he's pretty complete. Boxer. He's really fast for a light heavyweight. He's got power. He's unorthodox, so he's very, very hard to figure out. That's what Marcus Brown had so many problems with. Hot Rod's one of the top guys, man. He definitely has to be included in that argument. Hot Rod's been on many, many occasions told me that he would love a fight with Kovalev because he sparred him many times and pretty much beat him up. He's called Kovalev very basic. Now, Kovalev has kind of made some changes and whatnot, so maybe he's a different fighter, maybe not. I mean, but definitely can't sleep on Hot Rod, man. He's definitely in the picture, man. I would love to see him get another fight with Marcus Brown. He's been calling him out for years. Marcus wants nothing to do with him. And I understand, you know, if you beat someone or quote-unquote beat someone, you really don't need to go down that road again if he's a dangerous guy. But he's definitely one to look out for as well in that picture with Bivol and all of them.
Courtney, you made a significant point through the chat that it's going to be tough for Bivol to fight any of those three title holders that we mentioned because of the, again, going back to networks, right? One is Bivol is signed with DAZN and the other three on ESPN. You want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, like I said, Bivol is the odd man out right now. Bivol and Marcus Brown, you know, ironically, from what Joseph Correa was just saying, the thing about Marcus Brown is he's gotten to where he is. He's, you know, one was a shady decision against Hot Rod, and in his last fight where he came to, you know, win an interim belt, was basically on a headbutt that split the guy's, you know, Badu Jack's forehead open. And obviously nobody's going to be good any good after that. So, I mean, benefited to where things have been due to some unfortunate circumstances, and now he kind of sits in purgatory as far as what he can do, because, you know, you got three full champions who are aligned with ESPN. You got Bivol, who is on DAZN. You're on PBC. With being the WBC interim champion, that makes him the mandatory for Vozdik. So that, you know, as far as Taman and Bob Arum, you know, they haven't really been playing nice with each other since they got together and made, you know, made Weather Pacquiao happen. But I mean, they have gone head to head a couple times in some purse bids, and you know, Top Rank is one of one some. PBC is one some. So that's going to be a fight with, as far as Marcus Brown is concerned versus Vozdik, that that's going to go to the highest bidder. But Mayor, even if Marcus Brown comes out the victor in that, he just becomes another odd man out. It highlights another situation where, you know, if these guys are going to get paid legitimately, something's got to give as far as allowing them to cross networks, and work with other platforms and other, make fights against other promoters, especially on the PBC side, where these guys are all operating because they have an advisory contract with Al Haymon, but they're not signed to any one promoter. These guys on ESPN are legit signed to a promoter. They're signed with Top Rank. Bivol on the Zone, he's legit signed to Matchroom Boxing. So the narrative, that's why PBC, that's why Haymon gets so much clout, is when they're saying, you know, on that side, they're saying, we can't make these fights, or they don't want to cross the street with us. But the thing is, you don't actually have a promoter that's tying you down. You don't actually have a TV contract that's putting you down. It's just this one figure behind the scenes who won't speak to the media, who won't explain his, the method behind his madness. And it's just these guys saying, well, no, I'm not crossing the street, or no, you know, this can't happen because I'm over here. So that's the thing that people are really starting to get tired of, as far as Cayman Online fighters and as far as the PBC, in that there's no explanation as to what the hold is on these guys coming over and making these fights if they're not signed to a network and they're not signed to a promoter.
Woo! Did you take two breaths on that one? That was a good point. We're almost wrapping up the show, but there's one more topic I want to talk about, because I almost feel like this boxer kind of, I almost feel like he's become a little bit irrelevant in the last couple of months, and that's my man Triple G. So we all know he's got a new deal with the Zone, but what's anybody hearing anything in underground of, as far as like who is his next opponent, potential Triple G versus Canelo 3? Like, anybody been hearing anything at all whatsoever? Tommy, Joseph, D-Rock?
He's supposed to be fighting a guy out of Poland next when he does come back on the Zone. That was the last I've heard of it, is that he's potentially going to be fighting a guy. I can't pronounce the guy's name, don't really remember it, but his next opponent is supposed to be from Poland, an up-and-coming European undefeated fighter.
Joseph, you think that potentially a Triple G versus Canelo 3 maybe could happen after – Canelo whips on Danny Jacobs May 4th?
Yeah, but there's obviously going to be a lot of red tape there. They're going to do everything they can to kind of make the fans wait. Because the thing is, now Canelo's in the driver's seat, for sure. Even though, you could see the fight, the previous fights, as in Triple G's favor or whatnot, the fact is, on record, Canelo has the win now. So he's in the driver's seat. Oscar is not always the easiest to deal with. So there could be a lot of hang-ups. Seems like we've been talking about a lot of promotional red tape this show, but that's another one that, we could see that potentially. I do think that it could happen. Much like I said with Wilder, anything can happen if enough money is thrown out there. But we'll see, man. I'm trying to think of the guy's name that Courtney's talking about, but that's what they're trying to line up, a prospect, a guy who's up and coming for him. But nothing else. I haven't heard anything, or there's no talks of him potentially wanting to fight somebody else right now.
Tommy, would you love to see another Triple G versus Canelo fight? Because I sure as hell would.
Oh yeah, I'd love to see it again, man. And I would hope that they make it. You know, I know that they said it, his deal is what, six fights, and I think he's expected to fight two times a year. I would hope that somewhere in there he's, you know, he's on the trajectory to land right on those big pay-per-view weekends and land one of those major big fights. We know that it'll be, like Joseph said, you know, Canelo's in the driver's seat as far as positioning with age and the downslope and things like that as well. So, I mean, is going to have to be, you know, it'll be about pride as it always is with Triple G, but it's going to be about a little bit of that money and what's going to happen in that fight. So I'd love to see it because, I mean, there's still some bad blood there. We know that. And I think that it would still be a nice little brawl either way it goes.
Yeah, definitely. Those two are made to fight each other for, like, ever, for life. It'd always be a great fight.
Yeah. Just sign him up for two more.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get two. I don't know if we're going to get another, to be honest.
No.
You know, but right before we end the show, just predictions really quick. Danny Jacobs obviously is going to fight Canelo Alvarez May 4th. Just want to get just a 30-second prediction from everybody. Tommy, since we left with you, let's start with you.
Triple G wins. I think
Danny Jacobs versus Canelo.
Oh, yeah, versus Canelo. Canelo, I think Canelo's going to win that. Jacobs, he'll come out, and I think he'll give us a few good rounds in there, but I think ultimately Canelo's going to prove to be a lot smarter and skillful in that match.
Joseph?
It's a tough fight to call, man. Depends on what version of Danny Jacobs shows up, but on the show many, many times I've talked about Canelo and just how good he is. At this point, I don't know if there's any middleweights that can truly match him because no one has the experience he has with the opponents he's fought, and he just keeps getting better. So it's going to be really tough, but Canelo will probably edge him.
Courtney.
You know, if the best Danny Jacobs shows up, you know, a similar Danny Jacobs that showed up against Triple G, he's just going to lose a decision. But if I think with the way Canelo has elevated his game and has blossomed into a boxer puncher, and has just basically evolved, I think if Danny Jacobs has any mental lapses, loses focus, and makes any mistakes, he's going to pay dearly. Especially as the fight wears on and it goes into those later rounds and and if he starts to fatigue, Canelo is going to be there. But I think Danny Jacobs, he is a pure talent. He is a very cerebral guy and he's got a lot of heart. Just from what he's been through. And just the adversity he's come back from in and outside of the ring. So I think if he's on, if he's the best version of himself, he'll lose the unanimous decision. But if there's anything less than that, he's going home early.
Yeah, so gauging his last fight, also I'm going to toot my own horn. I'm going to say it again. I told you so, Courtney Tanner, that there was going to be a dehydration clause. Factoring that in, factoring how good Canelo has gotten, factoring in that he's gotten over the Triple G hump, and I think that's built up his confidence, even though I think he lost both fights. I think that Danny Jacobs is going to hit the canvas tonight. I really do. You know, if I'm the betting man, I'd bet that Danny Jacobs hits the canvas. And I'm sad to say that because I like Jacobs. I like the way he talks. I like the way he walks. I like the way, you know, he boxes. I love his story, you know, with, you know, being a cancer survivor. You know, I love his relationship with his son. I love everything about him, you know. I love everything about the guy. You know, I love the fact that he punked out Charlo, one of the Charlo brothers, you know, on camera. I like everything about this guy. You know, he's the real deal. But I just think Canelo, with his resume, which is one of the best resumes in boxing, I just think that he is no match for Canelo, And I think May 4th, you're going to see, you might see an early night for Danny Jacobs, because I'm gauging it, you know, based on the last performance against Darrenchenko. I didn't think he did too well. I know he won the fight, but I think that any other fighter, Canelo or Triple G that night, if that was the same DJ, I think that you would have seen DJ on the ground. But anyway, it's going to make to be a great fight. And again, the only people that are going to win are the boxing fans, pretty much. You know, so I want to thank everybody that's been on tonight. Joseph Correa, always a pleasure. I know you're going to make the Teofimo podcast happen. Tell the audience really quick, if they wanted to, you know, get in touch with you, read your material and stuff like that, you know, what your site, your Instagram handler. I mean, I know what it is, but go ahead and tell the audience.
www.frontproofmedia.com. Got probably the best writer in the game in Hector Franco there. Make sure to check out his stuff. And you can follow us on Instagram at Front Proof Media. That's it, man. Twitter at Front Proof Media. I appreciate you guys here at the podcast. It's
as
always
we do,
a pleasure.
Appreciate you and Hector as well.
And good to build with you guys, man.
Awesome, awesome. It's always a pleasure to have you, Joseph. And we're actually, you know, we miss Hector, man. We want to get him back on the show as well. Hopefully we can make that happen soon. And again, frontproofmedia.com. Check them out. Check out their Instagram. They have some sick pictures of fighters up close and personal, and as well as, boxing matches. So check them out. You know, huge pundits of the game and just very knowledgeable. And, you know, just to remind you guys, we're on Spotify, Stitcher, and iTunes. Tommy, thank you very much. D-Rock, thank you. Courtney Tanner, always a pleasure. Aaron, sorry, I know you're hearing. Thank you so much. Aaron does a lot of the back admin stuff. He doesn't get enough credit for what he does. But once again, Season 2, Episode 30, thank you to everybody out there that tuned in. I appreciate it.
Happy birthday to Michael Gomes. Happy birthday, bro.
I appreciate it. I'm about to leave and go get me a happy birthday drink.
Word.
All right, guys. We'll talk soon.
I just have a desire to be great. You know, that's one of the main things. The fact that there's another man on the other side of the ring that wants to hurt me.
I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time.
He can bring the pressure. He can box. I'm a true champion. I'm willing to go to his turf. I'm a step one. I'm a crush him. Y'all can mark my word to this. I'm a crush him. He's a C-plus fighter. I'm an A-plus fighter because I'm a dominate. This guy is flat for these swing while I'm not worried about who his trainer is because the trainer can't get in there and fight for him already, mentally, physically, because I'm a team like he's a C-plus fighter. I'm a dominate. I'm a dominant fighter.
I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal, most vicious, and most ruthless champion that's ever been. There's no one to stop me. Link to the conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Gibson. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairport. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat your children.
Can you? Listen. Your concentration is weaving a little bit. Take it up. Take it out. Fire's coming. Are you ready for the fire? Those were firemen. We are firemen. The heat doesn't bother us. We live in the heat. We train in the heat. It tells us that we're ready. We're at home. We're where we're supposed to be. Flames don't intimidate us. What do? We control the flames. We control them. We move the flames where we want to. And then we...